Welcome to Bartender at Large. I'm your host, Eric Castro. And as usual, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in the industry. With me today are...
My name is Souther Teague.
My name is Austin Henley.
Fellas, let me say thanks again for coming onto the show again.
Thanks for having us.
On a while back.
And on the opposite coast this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, last time at Amore Margo in New York, and now this time at this bar.
So I'm psyched to have you guys, because we're actually going to be bartending tonight.
Yes, yeah. At Polite Provisions.
Yeah, we're going to have an Amargo takeover at Polite.
We have the Scrappies on the table today because you and I collaborated with them and Austin to make a new flavor, which is called, fittingly, I think, Polite Amore.
Yeah.
So a bi-coastal collaboration.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all bi. So we're gonna make some drinks, stir up some drinks at Amore Margo style, which means no sugar, no juice, nothing shaken, and we're gonna use a lot of bitters. So definitely this one's gonna be on the menu.
Yeah, I'm psyched, man. I'm super pumped. It was cool to like be able to work with you guys on this.
Yeah, well, Austin did, I think, most of the heavy lifting because you and I are pretty lazy and old. It's a ginger hibiscus. So I'm not really sure. Do we ever nail down how it's gonna go? Like they're gonna.
I want to sell them to the public.
We're going to sell them at Amore, and we're going to sell them at Polite for a period of time, and then it's going to go to the public?
Yeah,
is that how it works?
Yeah, but we're definitely going to have them at Amore Margo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely have some.
So by the time this airs, people will probably be able to buy them already.
Yeah, sure.
So.
Yeah, I hope so. It's going to be a great night. I'm super stoked to be here in California. This is my first time in San Diego.
My first time, too.
So I hear you just had your mind blown for like a badass lunch.
Yeah, Chris Keach, who's your local Jägermeister rep, took me to... I don't remember the name of the place, but it was like super authentic chorizo.
Tropilas, I think it's called.
Yeah.
It's a little place I just know by location. I've been eating there for years.
Yeah,
there's like spots like cafeteria.
There's a line out the door, and he's like, "It goes fast. Don't worry."
Yeah.
We stand in this line, and just click, 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 and they're just whipping. They only serve 5 things on the entire menu. We ordered 4, so I'm stuffed. So some bitters are gonna help me get through that.
Yeah.
Mm. But really stoked to be in California and have Mexican food. I don't think people realize it so much that. New York City, as we know, because we live there, has no Mexican food to speak of. And I'm probably offending...
I'm
probably offending a bunch of people by saying
there's
that.
There's a couple spots. There's little pockets
but
you're going to find.
But it's fewer and further
Alex
between...
Alex is going to send an angry letter.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's fewer and further between than it should be for a metropolis of that size. You know, you really have to dig to find it, you know?
They are there, but they're definitely... You got to go out of your way. It's not just like... Around the corner.
And they're hidden. You know, there's that one that's on A that I never can remember the name that starts with a Z. It's on A between 13 and 14. It's a deli, a Mexican-owned deli. And in the back of the deli, it's a taco stand. And they do lingua and tripe and like all the real.
I've been to that little place, dude. It's good.
It's, it starts with this, like, I can't remember the name.
No, it's like a long
Zaragoza.
Word.
Zaragoza.
Yeah.
I've been missing out.
It's amazing. But like, you have to dig to find this stuff. Whereas I feel like in California, it's like every place is that level, and then there are places that are even better.
Yeah, because in San Diego, I mean, I'm like a $10 Uber ride from Mexico from where we live. You know, Polite, it's like, it's so close. And, you know, since like the distance is so short, culturally, and also this used to be part of Mexico.
Of course, yeah.
Like, I mean, I've had staff before that worked at Polite that lived in Mexico, and they have that, you know, the worker pass to go through the border pretty quick. Yeah, then they live there, and then just come here, work, do what they got to do, and then go back home to their family in
That's
Mexico.
Amazing. That's
yeah,
amazing.
It's that close.
Never even thought of that. Yeah, I used to live in Montpelier, Vermont, and people lived across the Canadian border and worked.
Yeah,
so they had to do it every day.
Yeah. The food's so good. I keep meaning to go down there because, like, and actually go down to Rosarito and eat some, like, lobster and stuff. Puerto Nuevo, you should do that. You have a little bit of time on your hands right now.
Brother, like your road trip.
Let's talk about you for a minute. You're going to be here in California for...
Yeah, I'm going to be here for about a month, and then I'm going to Costa Rica for 6 months to reassess, decompress, and then come back at it.
That's not a bad move, brother. I envy you, man. That's a good call.
I think that's a thing that not enough bartenders do, which is take time to, 6 months is pretty egregious, I guess, but like to take
just
a real...
Just like 2 weeks, 10 days.
Yeah, and it's hard once you get into the rhythm of...
The grind of
how many ever shifts you work a week and then covering shifts. It's hard to get away.
Just
it's hard
New
to
York,
think about
man,
getting
like the shifts are brutal. You're working these long shifts, maybe 6 days a week. So you're behind the bar 60, 70 hours a week. And you never get a chance to like recharge your batteries.
Yeah, and it's really important for your mental health, for your physical health. And sometimes it seems like it'd be impossible to get away for a little while, but you just have to take the plunge and do it. Yeah.
Plus,
you work better.
Yeah, you become a better worker, you're more effective, more productive. And I think
and
a lot of
creative.
Bartenders. Yeah, because all your juices get replenished, man. You get fully recharge your batteries. And I think a lot of bartenders are like, oh, I took some time off. Like last week or last month, I took 5 days off and I went to Tales of the Cocktail. And you're like,
yeah.
Or then I went to Kentucky for a few months ago. And you're like, no, you take time off away from work, away from the grind. Away, yeah,
or
away from
San Diego
cocktails.
To work at Flight Provision.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
This doesn't count. But I think
this does feel like a vacation.
I think that's important to note, though. You know, our professional lives, probably most of the people watching the show as well, you know, our professional life overlaps so closely with our recreational life that the line gets really blurry, and I think it's very important to take time away from all of it. Mm-hmm. And hiking out of the country sounds great.
Yeah, but sounds you're going to be working. What are you going to be doing?
I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to be doing, but I'm going to be doing something. There are a lot of options. The hotel that I'm going to be working with has a brewery currently, so hopefully I'm going to be able to learn a lot more about brewing. They're hoping to start a distillery,
so awesome. It
would be really great as a bartender to get the perspective of a different side of the industry, and hopefully they'll be able to inform what I do. You did the same thing. You went to the brand side and then came back to the bar side.
Yeah, it's important. I think you become a little more rounded, especially like, you know, when you're running the bars and operating, you know what they can and can't do to help you out.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
It's easier to like negotiate deals with like pricing, all that stuff.
Yeah, I reach out to reps all the time and
especially when you're like, hey,
beg
man.
Them to just tell me what they can do. That way I'm not just shooting in the dark.
You know, we're like, hey, I love this spirit. I want to put it in the menu on the cocktail, man, but it's like $42.
Yeah.
Like, you got to work with me on this a little bit, you know? You know, and now I feel like from having worked with the brand and worked on that side, I have a better understanding of what they can and can't do.
My best foot in the door in that world right now is Eric Job, who worked for Maida Mori Marg, and then now works for Altos Tequila.
Awesome.
He's good stuff, good juice. But he's been really sort of helping me understand what brands can and can't do for me. Because I've never, Amor's over 5.5 years old now, and I've never really relied on that help in the past. But I need to. I'm too small to kind of do it all by myself, and it's very helpful.
Yeah, I think we got our foot in thinking in those terms when we started doing 2 weeks notice.
Indeed, yeah. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks notice, as you know, is a monthly event at Amore Margo where we close the bar to the public, and I take 60 reservations in that tiny room. You think to yourself, but we do 5 2-hour blocks of it's 3 cocktails paired with snacks that I make. I used to be a chef. And we do a prefix price on that evening, and it's just a ton of fun. But the 3 drinks are typically sponsored by someone. And so that, I've been doing that for over a year now, once a month. So that makes perfect sense. That's taught me a lot about what brands can and can't offer you. Because there's also just a bunch of legal stuff that I don't know.
Especially in New
about.
York, it's a lot stricter than some states.
I often feel like New York doesn't want people to be in business.
Like, brother, really, I don't think you're wrong, man.
Really,
someone like
really fucking.
And then you know, and then I feel like they totally hassle sometimes. You know, the businesses that are like trying to do stuff, and then you go and you see some nasty little like deli or something that you know they can't pass health code. Like they somehow have a fucking A in their window.
Yeah, a fucking A.
You know? Yeah, true. So you know, it's like sometimes I feel
like they
hassle.
I realize I just swore.
Sometimes.
I'm glad you swore too, because I was gonna totally forget that. You know. I do a weekly podcast with Damon Bolte on awesome, Heritage guy. Radio, one of my dearest friends, such a sweetheart, on the Heritage Radio Network called Speakeasy. He's been running that show since it started.
For years.
For 5.5.
Yeah.
How many shows is it?
Well,
they just hit.
It's a great podcast.
200?
We just hit 200 about 10 weeks ago, so we're 200. This next one, I believe, is 210. We do it every Wednesday at 3 o'clock.
How'd you get involved with it?
So I've been on the show twice, actually, once with Austin, and Damon and I are old friends. I used to work at Prime Meats, and Damon reached out to me and just said, hey, man, I like when you're on the show. I'd love to have you come on and be my guest host, because this is 6 months or so ago. He said, because last year I missed 22 episodes while building out Grand Army, his bar. That's half of a year. And he said, whenever I miss the show, they just play a rerun, and that kind of sucks for the audience and whatever. He said, so if I could have someone be on and be my guest, then if ever I need to miss a show, you could do it without me. But it would be weird to have someone just come in and do it without me. You know, so if you can be on the show as my guest. And I was like, he said, just come to as many shows as you can. I haven't missed one yet. I fucking love it. It's like my favorite part of the week. I get to talk to industry people from all over. We get to really have a good time. So he hasn't missed a show since I've been on, so I haven't done one alone yet, and I don't, that's not my goal. The goal is to make the show great. So now I kind of do the booking for the show, so I want to get you on when you come out next time.
I do want to come on, yeah.
You've never been on, that's crazy.
Yeah, I've almost done it like a few times. It's like something always happened at the last minute that kept me from being
on. Yeah, because this is great, but you definitely have a face for radio.
I've been told that, so I take no offense. Though, if you're one of those people, the podcast is still available on SoundCloud and iTunes.
Nice plug.
If you have to agree with the guy.
Yeah. Speakeasy from Heritage Radio Network is on iTunes and Stitcher. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there we go. That's the plug. But it's a great show. Similar to your show, we talk to everybody in the
field.
But
that's a little more intensive. I do like the show. You guys seem to be, it's a lot more like nitty-gritty nuts and bolts of how things get done.
Some yes,
like,
and some
like
no.
Sometimes we just fuck around.
Yeah, well, we fuck around quite a bit too. Similar to you. Every episode we're drinking something on the air. Mm-hmm. You can't see us, but we are. Mm-hmm. It's the Heritage Radio is a studio that's built inside of a shipping container that's literally in the center of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So if you go
there a million times, I never knew that.
If you go there to the restaurant and you sit at the bar, or you're facing the bar, to your left is like a courtyard area, and then there's a window. If you notice, that window's on the side of a shipping container, and it's mm-hmm. got a sign in it that says "on air" when we're on air. You're looking at us with the mics. We're just in there waving at people eating pizza.
Cool. Yeah. So when you do the show, you're actually looking out onto the restaurant.
Yeah. The table right outside the window is table 42. So we always comment or make fun of the people at table 42 while we're on. Oh, first date happening at 42. Mm-hmm. And they're always looking in to see what we're doing in there. The show Heritage Radio Network is amazing. Mostly what we talk about or talk to are people who are in the field, but what we're trying to do at this point is kind of branch out to people who are only maybe tertiarily involved in the field. So last week's guest was birthday girl. Her birthday was the day before yesterday. Tess Mix, sister of Ivy Mix, twins, so it was her birthday as well. Who a lot of folks in our field don't know right away. But she owns a production company called Legit, and she makes films and videos and commercials and whatever. And a great majority of them are about booze or involve us. Like
she did some of her footage in the Bartender Lark.
Exactly. Amazing. So trying to kind of branch out, but we talked to anywhere from bar backs to bartenders to distillers, makers, authors, brewers, coffee people we have on the show, anything to drink. That's our show.
Let's go ahead and dig in. Then if somebody wants to know more about it, what website should they go to?
That's a good question.
Just Google Speakeasy Radio, it'll come up.
Heritage Radio Network, I'm sure that's the website. Yeah, you can find it. It's easy to find. It's been on for 5.5 years. We've got 210 episodes. It's out there.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man.
Yeah. Thanks for making me look stupid.
No, I figured you would have known.
You did the heavy lifting.
That question wasn't exactly out of left field.
I probably should know that information.
Oh, man. What's the website? Shit.
Gotcha, journalism.
Thanks, lamestream media.
Muckraker over here.
Man. So anyway, brother, let's pivot back to what you were saying.
Sure.
So you're going to be in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
You're going to be studying, trying to learn a little bit about brewing and distilling.
Yeah, learn a little bit about brewing and distilling, and just help the operations of their bar program. And
so you're going to be working.
I'm not going to be working behind the bar. Okay. I'm going to be.
Also, he's taking a month off. You're going to stay here in Southern California for a month.
Yeah, I'm going to be here for a month.
Then down. So he's got. That's the break I was talking about.
Yeah.
Full break. No work.
Yeah. Just going to be doing some exploring.
Then off.
Just getting out of the New York day to day.
So what inspired this, man?
What inspired this was
fatigue, exhaustion.
Fatigue and exhaustion, and I fell in love with someone who was going to Costa Rica, so I decided to tag along as her plus one.
That's awesome, man.
That was really the impetus for it.
And then you just decided just like that?
Oh, it was more than just like that, but it was pretty much just like that. Being in New York, getting ground down by the routine and the schedule, and then just deciding rather than waiting for her to come back, just go.
Yeah, man. Then so you already, and then after that 6 months.
And she's already got the gig at the hotel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're going to you just said, plus one this thing.
Yep.
You're just going to kind of squeak in and get some work.
Costa Rica just seems like such a hard place to adjust to.
Yeah, it just sounds, it sounded terrible to go to paradise and.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make beer and possibly make some spirits.
Not really, no.
Drink a lot of rum for really cheap.
A good rum for really cheap. And then most likely back back after that to Southern California, looking to settle either around here or LA. Not really, man.
Well, if you fall in love with brewing, San Diego is not a bad place to be.
This is the town, right?
Yeah,
and that's something.
I'm not saying it's the best beer scene in America, but it is the most awarded. Just throwing that out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But
it's the most awarded beer scene in America.
Has it eclipsed Portland as most per capita breweries?
Maybe not, but we have like 1.4 million people here, so it might be a little tough for us. But sure. We do have, I think, 122 breweries.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. There's like, shit, just from where we're sitting right now, there's maybe in a mile in any direction, there's probably about 8 in any direction you pick.
Wow.
Yeah.
We'll have to do some exploring.
Yeah. Go learn how to brew. Come back. Let's brew some beer.
Why not?
Yeah.
So in general, beer is my weakest category behind the bar.
You have a weakness for it, too.
Yeah, exactly. Miller High Life.
It is hard to say no to beer, so that's my weakness as well.
So I really wanted to, I think that a good way to get myself engaged with beer, because I've never been a big beer drinker, and I've worked at places that are cocktail-focused or have strong wine programs. Mm-hmm. And my father owned a wine shop for my whole life, so that was kind of my gateway into the industry. I learned a lot about wine from him and from working at a store when I was younger. But beer was never really a part of my life growing up. Like, my father drank wine. He didn't come home and, you know, after work and crack a beer. He drank wine, taught me about wine. So beer has always been like kind of the thing that I sort of like tuck away, don't really know about, and never really gained a passion for because I was never exposed to it. So getting exposure on the nuts and bolts side, that's kind of how I sink in and get passionate about things. Yeah. It's like learning about the history of cocktails was what really got me engaged about making them. So I think that getting engaged with the process of the creation of the product will engender that passion to the bar side of things.
Beer's food, you know?
Yeah.
It really is just liquid bread.
And food for the soul. I have a fondness for beer.
Yeah, there's a lot of anthropologists who actually think beer is the reason why humans stopped being gather-wanderers and actually started like creating communities and stuff.
I've heard some of these, yeah.
Right.
I don't know where to attribute this quote to, but I think it's on the side of Brooklyn Bowl in Williamsburg. It says, beer makes you feel how you ought to feel without beer. But
cheers,
I don't know where
we're
to
go. We're going to go get a beer after this.
I don't know where to
be polite.
Yeah. But that's great.
I think it's at least somewhat important to note. What was your first job in New York in bar-wise?
Booker & Dax as a barback.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Which is where I met you.
My first day was your last day.
Yeah. So I can't believe the place closed down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very sad. But fortunately, for the last week, both of us got to go back and got to do a guest shift. I did mine with Ann Robinson, who's now the bar director at Westlight, which just opened, new Andrew Carmelini spot.
She's amazing. She is awesome. So it was 3, maybe 4 days. Booker & Dax invited back all the previous bartenders. I was on the opening team there. So we all went back and did a guest shift, just a couple hours. It was me and Dana. Dana Corey, hilarious. I got drilled. So normally it's seating room only in there, but for these nights because it was coming to a close. Oh, and let's talk about why they're closed. So Sambar, Dave Arnold always said Booker & Dax is living on borrowed time. You know, we're in a space that doesn't belong to us. So Sambar kind of grew enough that it needed its space back. Dave's definitely.
So it's expanding into that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It was in there. It didn't work because they weren't that strong, I think.
Well,
so they backed
it originally
out of there.
It was the milk bar. It was the original milk bar space.
Right. They moved across the street.
Yep. So it was designed as a bakery. So it's not the easiest bar to work behind.
It really
because
wasn't.
It's spread into two separate sections.
I remember that.
You have two bartenders that are all the way across the room from each other. And Sambar has a duck rotisserie. And their pork bun station behind one of the bars.
The bar I always worked.
And the bar I always worked.
Yeah. I've worked behind a bar where I was like sharing it with kitchen, and it sucks.
Well, we have the duck rotisserie, which it stands to the ceiling, and it's got these ducks spinning, and it's 1,000 degrees on your back.
And it was a big reach to get to the guests to drop a drink.
Yeah.
And I always worked shifts with Anne, and her arms were too short to make the reach, so I always got stuck behind that bar with the duck rotisserie.
Yeah, I always called it the duck pond, because every now and again I would take a moment and turn around and just watch the ducks. very calming. No, it was burning. It was intensely hot. I'd be standing there sweating.
I can imagine like summers. Like,
oh my God!
Like, it's so hot.
Well, at least in the summers we had the liquid nitrogen. In the winters we had the red hot poker drink.
So
you had six ducks roasting behind you at however many hundreds of degrees, and then submerge a 1500 degree poker into a cocktail and shoot flames about 4 feet in the air.
You guys just mentioned two drinks that I need to know more about and that everybody else needs to know more about. You mentioned liquid nitrogen and then a hot poker.
Overwhelming.
You can't just skim over those. Yeah.
Overwhelmingly, we used LN for chilling glassware, which was a very efficient method to do that, and also just lucky for us, kind of showy.
Yeah, because again, right? It was a bakery. We didn't have glass chillers.
Yeah, we didn't have any place to chill glassware.
So it was a necessity.
And I was literally, again, that duck thing right behind me, that's where the glassware was too, right behind me. So I would grab a glass that would be not just warm or maybe even warm from just coming out of the dishwasher, but kind of hot.
Shit.
So we splash in LN on order of a drink. So the glass is just sitting there roiling with LN, but it's chilling the glass, making the drink, sling out the LN, and then in goes the drink in a really frosty glass. So mostly that's what the LN was for. We weren't doing a lot of We weren't doing any drinks where we incorporated LN into the drink.
Except for my favorite one, the Bangkok Daiquiri.
Well, yeah, but that wasn't in the drink.
No.
So we'd use LN to,
That was a drink with Dave Arnold, like a basil daiquiri, right?
Yeah, what Dave Arnold monikered nitro muddling. So we would, into the tin would go the leaves of Thai basil, and then in would go some LN, and you'd allow it to freeze those leaves, and then when you go to muddle them, it would powder them. It would be powder.
It would sound like shattering glass.
But it would be so brilliantly green, and the chloroform would stay in there, and the flavor would be amazing. That then when we'd shake that daiquiri, which was a pretty standard daiquiri from that point on, and then when you strained it out, it was just brilliant looking.
Hulk
and
green.
Very aromatic. So the LN was just there for that kind of thing. And then if you want to talk about the poker, an ordnance that Dave built.
Yeah. So there was the Booker and Dax, Booker and Dax the bar,
in
and
then
there was
garage somewhere.
The Booker and Dax lab. I'm sure you've heard of this, like the Searsol, the tool that he made to distribute heat from a blowtorch. So he made a bunch of gizmos and gadgets. So one of them was the hot poker. So a lot of what we did at Booker and Dax was trying to solve problems in bartending that people didn't even know were problems.
Yeah.
According to what Dave wanted to do. So with a hot drink, you either have it, in a, I guess, a crock pot apparatus or like a hot water heater, and it's constantly being heated. So you get evaporation.
And degradation. Yeah.
So, or you add hot water or something, which you might.
Too much dilution.
Exactly. So Dave devised a way to get the amount of heat with the least amount of evaporation, and you could control the dilution by adding exactly the amount of water that you wanted to. So it was stick about yay big with
a heating. Looked like a giant curling iron.
Yeah.
That would glow red.
Yeah, it's somewhere between a curling iron and a lightsaber. So the end would be glowing
and
hot.
And a branding iron.
Glowing hot, and we would just stick it into a pint glass that had, tempered pint glass, that would have the cocktail in it. And then it would combust. Big flames, and you get this beautiful, like, cotton candy smell throughout the room. It smelled like it was a candy shop, and this
caramelizing flavor. The sugars that are in the booze.
And you can't really get that kind of caramelization in the sugars in a cocktail without that sort of intense direct heat.
Yeah, and also, it's
now, how hot did that poker get?
1500 degrees. things we know by rote. Also, it's interesting to note that this is an old technique that Dave just kind of revised. You'd have a posset.
Yeah.
When we went to the tavern, where the tavern keeper would have typically a beer, but maybe with some mead in it or some honey or, extra bullshit. But he would have a poker always in the wintertime in the hot, in the potbelly stove or in the fireplace.
It's called a toddy stick. That's where you get hot toddy.
They would just fucking whack that thing, right? So this is the same idea. He just kind of made it accessible and modern. And those things were fucking dangerous as hell.
I was about to say, we could never use one of those.
They were dangerous as hell. They would last a month, and we made a million of them. Like they start to degrade because they're getting so hot, it just won't.
They would degrade and they would die, and when one would go, when it would just go, and there would be a huge plume of sparks.
Yeah, these things were awesome.
Those would be good to use in a bar that you don't own.
This will never be
exactly
a tool that makes it to market.
Uh-uh.
This is not something that's
good.
You know what? I went out and bought my Dave Arnold approved.
What is it? NSF?
Is that the NSF label that's on your toaster? But that's never going to get one. But again, an amazing tool, and the results were delicious. And I think it's important.
Well, I had a cocktail.
We were all very well trained on using it.
Lots of training.
We weren't just sticking pokers any which way.
I think I'd like a rum flip with that.
Yeah, lots of.
It was really good.
We did a lot of drinks, but there was lots of training and lots of like, you know.
Waivers were signed.
Didn't face the guests when you did this. You turned away so that they could see it happen, but it wasn't like in their face. Like, you don't. Yeah, waivers were signed. Yeah, all of it. All of it. But never an accident with that particular tool.
Yeah.
Thank God.
No, I worked at Poker Index for 2 years, bartenders for 2 years, using the hot poker every winter and using liquid nitrogen every single day to chill every glass. The first time I hurt myself behind a bar was with a bread knife cutting ice.
At a different bar.
A different place entirely.
You guys had a pretty competent staff there, though, so I think that did help a lot.
It was...
You guys had a good crew.
There was a point in time where that crew was incredible. Mm-hmm. And... everyone's got.
Right after you left,
I was about to say the same thing. Right when I got out of it,
so there was a point in time where we had all been working together for at least a year, and it was staff of four or five people. But everyone's gone on to do their own thing, and everyone's been doing some pretty cool
Chris
stuff.
Chris Lauder came out of there. Yeah. And that was his first bartending.
Yeah,
job.
Right.
You believe that shit?
Yeah, good stuff.
His first bartending job ever bar backing at Booker and Dax, and now look at that.
When he left to go to Amore Amargo. I took over Chris's bar backing shifts at Booker and Dax.
Yeah, and then later he came to work for me. So he's like, I'm following Chris's. I'm like, all right, well, you're off to Korea. South
he's
America,
out there,
close
enough.
He's crushing it. Yeah. Amazing. You know, Disney Prince pretty.
And he can sing.
He can sing. He's like an angel.
The first time I heard Chris Lauder sing, I like had to turn
how did
it
I
out
miss this?
To make sure it was Chris. Like, who's that singing? Where's that angelic voice coming from?
Yeah, he used to sing a lot behind the bar at Amore. Yeah.
He's a mean baritone, brother.
Yeah.
All right. Mean.
Yeah.
Very full, very lush.
Lush.
Are there any YouTube videos I could look up?
They must
Not
exist.
Yet.
They must
there should
exist.
Be. There should be.
Chris Lauder.
Yeah, let's get some YouTube videos of you singing. I put in my request for Mr. Fahrenheit. I love that song. He used to sing it all the time behind the bar. They call me Mr. Fahrenheit. Queen.
How do you know that song?
I'm sure you do. Come on.
I'm sure. Maybe I do.
Homework.
I'll look it up.
We'll go get a beer before the shift starts. We'll make you listen to Mr. Fahrenheit.
Though I have to admit, I'm bad with song titles.
Well, it's Queen. Well, anyway. So
let's hear you sing it.
I'm not going to sing. I'm not going to sing. But now I'm thinking about it. We're going to go get some beers because this is the place to get beer. Yeah. This guy's got to learn about beer. You got a month to cram and then go.
Can you eat again yet?
To act like you know what you're. Maybe. And then
we can go for some fish tacos before you guys shift tonight.
Dude, I'm never going to say no to Mexican food. Not while I'm here.
Some fish tacos, man.
Baja
some
style.
Ceviche.
Ugh. We get some beer, and then we maybe get some more food, even though I'm still stuffed.
We'll be fine.
And then we're going to go do our Polite Amore.
Yeah, tonight.
At Polite Provisions. I'm stoked.
I'm psyched.
Yeah, man.
All right. You guys want to add anything else? Have any other topics? So then I think I just really want a beer now, so we're just going to wrap it up.
Let's do it.
Cheers.
All right, cheers, fellas. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Again.
Thanks for watching this episode of Bartender at Large. If you like what you saw, don't forget to like, subscribe, or leave a comment below. Also, don't forget to check out bartenderatlarge.com for upcoming tour dates of the Bartender at Large documentary.